Thank you. All right. My name is John. I'm an alcoholic. And it's a pleasure to be back here again. I was reminded that the last time I was here was 2018, so over 4 years ago. And you guys have a nice group over here, and it's definitely a pleasure to be asked to come and share, especially about this book, because this is the book that really kind of changed my life and saved my life. And, you know, there's a lot of transformations that have happened. The talk that I'm going to give tonight is probably going to be very non-linear. I'm going to go all over the place. But I want to start with currently, right now, because I think it's important for you to know where I'm at right now, because it's very interesting. It turns out that the last month has probably been the most difficult month I've had in a very long time. And it's been difficult mostly because of life situations and circumstances. It started very innocently, not innocently, but very like innocuously. There was a plumbing problem in my house. I'd had a plumber come and fix it, and he ripped me off. He overcharged me. And then about a month ago, this problem returned and I had to get that fixed. So that was annoying, and that's how it started. And then, right around that same time, my stepson got into a moped accident in Brooklyn, and like lost his spleen, broke ribs, was in the hospital for a week. It was a scary situation, because he could have died, and so we were very worried about that. And then right after that, my dog that I've had, she was my sobriety dog, because I had her for about 12 years. She'd been getting sick. She was getting old. And, you know, anybody here who's a pet owner, you know how that one goes. You know someday that day's going to come. You don't want to think about it, but it's going to come. And the day came, and we had to put her down. And that was horrible. And then right after that, we said, let's hop back on the horse and get a puppy, you know, gotta go get a puppy. So we got a puppy, and within a week, we found out that the puppy had this very dangerous illness called parvo, and we had to, you know, take her to the hospital, and, you know. And then after we dealt with that, then after 2.5 years, I finally got COVID, you know? And I had a lot of pride in the fact that for the last 2.5 years, it couldn't get me. So it was a blow to my ego when I finally got COVID. So it was one thing after another after another. It's just life, right? That's life. And we talk about finding ourselves in a jackpot. Right? And a jackpot is like 3 bad things happen in a row, you know, lemon, 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 jackpot, you know, you're in a jackpot. And this whole thing, the reason why we do this and the reason that we're talking about this and we talk about this book and we do what's in this book, because it's about where the rubber meets the road, right? The proof is in the pudding. And so the question is, I'm honest with myself, this past month has been the most difficult month I've had in a very, very, very long time. I mean, a really long time. And so the question is, well, how'd I do? Right? How have I been doing as I've gone through that? And it's interesting because we get to be the witnesses of our own lives. You know, we witness what goes on between our ears, right? Even the stuff that other people don't know, we know what we're thinking. And so I've been witnessing, well, what's been my experience as I go through difficult times? And I'm happy to report, I'm here to report, this thing works. Because you know what happened? On every one of those things, it doesn't mean it wasn't frustrating, annoying, disheartening. It doesn't mean I wasn't sad with certain things that happened. For sure I was. But I know what my reaction would have been like in active alcoholism and in untreated alcoholism. I know what my reaction would be. I'm the kind of guy that as soon as the going gets tough and I get pissed. And I curse God out because I knew he wasn't really going to have my back. I knew it. You know, you're a fraud, a fake, you're no good. This whole spirituality stuff is BS. That's my default mode. That's where my head goes when things don't go my way. With untreated alcoholism or an active alcoholism, that's where my head goes. That everything's a sham. It's never going to work out for me. I knew it. I should have never got my hopes up. And this is what always happens. And screw it and let's burn the whole thing down. And that's not what happened. I mean, you know, through this past month, that's not what's happened. And I found myself looking at everything that happened and looking at, like, what I have to be grateful for. I mean, like, with my dog, for instance. You know, it's so amazing. It's so hard to put your finger on and describe what it is about, like, pets, right? It's, like, the weirdest thing. You have, like, unconditional love for this creature, right? And sometimes more than you do for, you know, other human beings, you know? And you have unconditional love for it. It has unconditional love for you. You take care of it. And you know what's crazy? It's like when I realized for the last 11 years that we had her, we gave her a good life. You know, she was a rescue. She was, you know, probably going to be put down. And we got her, and she had a great life. And I was grateful for what that experience did for me, to be able to have unconditional love for something. Because I'm not the kind of guy that has unconditional love. My love is very conditional. Very conditional. I came to find that out in Alcoholics Anonymous. So to have that experience, to be there for her, and to be there for her at the end, the whole way through, go through the hard parts, I was a no-show, no-call, and to be there. So, you know, that's like the kind of stuff that I started to focus on in my head was like that. You know, within the new puppy and she got sick, and it was scary because it was actually, you know, if it was left untreated, it could kill her. And we'd never had that experience with an animal before, so it was like we wanted to make sure we did it right. And, you know, the bonding that happened between us and the new puppy as we've gone through that. It's just every one of those circumstances that I described to you that happened in the past month for me, every one of them, there was like a silver lining to everything, you know? And that's as a result of going through this book and going through this work and developing a spirituality that's for me. Like, you don't have to have my brand of spirituality, and I don't have to have your brand of spirituality. That is like the good news of this whole program. And so that I wanted to give you that, like I wanted to start with that, you know, that's where I've been. I'm a strong proponent of this book because I know that it works. That it's not about, I think the thing that we kind of come in here maybe thinking and hoping and we're worried about is like we come in here and we want to hope, we want to have hope, we want to have some kind of faith, we want to think that this thing can work, but deep down inside we kind of suspect it's not going to work, you know, because the reality of the situation, what we really want, most of us, right, they describe alcoholics and addicts as being emotionally immature, you know, grandiose, you know, I don't know if anybody in here identifies with that, but I sure do, you know. And I come in here, and I just want, like, Santa Claus sobriety and Santa Claus God, you know. I just want him to give me all the gifts. I want everything to be perfect. I don't want anything to go wrong. I want things to go my way. And when I pray, I selfishly pray for things to go my way. And it's an unrealistic kind of spirituality because that's not how life works, right? We know that, right? We've all been living this. We know that life is going to throw curveballs at us, right? You know that on some random Wednesday in the afternoon sometime, you're going to get like hit right between the eyes with horrible news. And you don't know when it's coming. You have no idea when it's coming, so it's hard to plan for it. But someday, you're going to be caught off guard. We know this. That's what we're afraid of. And this program, what's amazing about this is like this program gives you the ability to handle whatever comes your way, whatever comes down the chute. That's the deal. That's what's amazing about this is like I come in here, I'd like everything to go my way. Eventually I realize the reality of the situation is it's not going to go my way. But this gives me the ability to face it. So that's where I wanted to start. Now, my first introduction to this book, I came into AA a very long time ago. I was a very young man. It's like 19. And I didn't come into AA because I wanted to be here. That's for sure. I came into AA because, I was in a lot of trouble, you know. Anybody in here come to AA because you're in a lot of trouble? Show of hands, anybody? Weird, right? Isn't that weird? Right? You show up in here because you're in trouble, not because you want to be here, right? I hated AA. I had no use for AA. I didn't really know what AA was, really. That not knowing something, that's not a barrier for me to hate it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to know anything about something to hate it. That's just the kind of personality that I have, you know? I can hate it. Just give me some... You name anything, I'll just have an opinion about it, you know? Like, I'm like one of those. And so, as far as I was concerned, AA was a sham. Ridiculous. Everything I knew about AA, I'd learned maybe in like a TV show or a movie. You know, like it was, in my mind, it was a place where people come to complain about the fact that they can't drink anymore. That's what I thought AA was. And so I'm now, I was in a lot of trouble. And my lawyer told me, he said, if you want the judge to do you any favors, you have to make it look like you're actually trying, you know. So this is what you're going to do. He told me what to do. And I said, okay, you know, I'm going to go along to get along. So I had to go to a program, an outpatient program. And as I was going to that program, one of their conditions for successful discharge was you had to attend 6 AA meetings. This is where it all starts for me, a very long time ago. So I'm in this program. And I'm like the youngest guy there by far. And there's all these older guys who have like a lot of experience with AA, and they go, "Oh man, those AA guys are so serious." I don't want to meet these guys. So I'm putting off those 6 AA meetings for as long as I could. And then finally, the day came. I said, "I better get this over with." So I show up to my first meeting. I get my paper signed. I didn't listen to a word that anybody said. And I was like, I knew I was right. They're idiots. You guys are all idiots. I didn't hear anything. But I was right. You're idiots. A week later, I come back to the same group because I didn't even know. Like, I knew so little about AA. I didn't know like there's AA all over the place. Like that group that I went to that first meeting, that was AA. You know. Like, okay, so come back a week from now? Great. So I come back a week later, same thing. Right? And I still am like, AA is hard. 2 down, 4 to go. I got to get 6 out of the way, and then I'm done. Right? Now, here's the thing. This is like the background information. Is as that's happening, like as I go to my first meeting, and then I go to my second meeting, I'm also bottoming out big time. I mean, I'm just like, you know, I'm like 19, but I feel like I'm 99. You know what I mean? Like, it was a very weird thing. I was one of those guys that I was pretty much convinced that I probably wasn't going to see 30, you know? Like, I just had that in my head. Like, I'm not going to make it to 30. So when you have that idea in your head, at least if you're me, you don't really try at anything. Because what's the point? Why would I try at school if it's never going to pay off for me anyway? You know what I mean? Like, what's the point? Why would you try? Why would you try to be a good worker if you're never going to, like, see the fruits of your labor? Why would you do that? So I basically didn't put any effort into anything, right? So I'm like, I feel like I'm at the end of my life, even though I'm at the beginning of my life. And I was just lost. I was a lost person. I didn't know, by the way, what they describe in this book, what the problem is. Like the first step problem. They describe it in here as like these three things that are going on at the same time. And I didn't know that those things were going on for me. Like I just, it was happening. I was experiencing it, but I didn't have like words to to name what it was or to describe it, you know? So they describe it as physical, mental, and spiritual, right? Physical is once I start, I can't stop. And I definitely have that, you know? Like, it's just like I start drinking and it's like it just takes over. I don't know why. Like, I don't know why. I thought that's kind of what it was like for most people. I didn't think that there was something special about that. The mental part, they describe it as once I stop, I can't stay stopped. You know, like I have a mind that will always bring me back to picking up this substance. And I have that. I didn't know that I had that, but I have that. And then they describe the spiritual part as like I have like it's like this emotional experience of the world as being restless, irritable, and discontent. You know, I'm easily annoyed. I'm never satisfied. Things seem to just, you know, get under my skin. I don't know why. I'm upset about things that I don't even know why I'm upset about it. You know, it just, the world is a horrible place, you know, and I hate, you know, the world and the people in it. You know, I hope you all die. That's how I am living my life. You know, thinking lots of evil thoughts about people and how I'd like to see them burn. And that's kind of my fuel. It's keeping me going. And I have no idea that any of those things are part of this larger issue that they describe in this book called alcoholism. You know, at that time, if you would have said to me, you're an alcoholic, I mean, I'd say, okay, yeah, I guess. I mean, I wasn't convinced that I was, you know. Like, I come from a family of lots of heavy drinkers and alcoholics. And I could tell you my grandfather, he's an alcoholic, for sure. And I'm nothing like him. But if I am an alcoholic, then I would have described myself in those early days as like the fun kind of alcoholic, you know? Like, I'm a fun one, you know? Like, I just want to have a good time, you know? I want to be like where the party's at. I just want to be like in the like action, 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 action. I like chaos. I like it. You know, like that's where I'm at. And I think that's a good thing, you know? I think that's like makes me like a colorful character. You know, I'm like an artist in my head. I'm like, you know, I'm like, in my head, it's like I have a whole idea about who I am. All of this stuff that I'm describing to you, I don't realize what it really means. You know what I mean? Like, I don't realize what all that stuff means. And I would come to find out in AA that this was all part and parcel of this illness that we call alcoholism. I don't know. Right? So I'm at my second AA meeting. I go there. I get the paper signed. And I leave. Last thing I would say before I get to the third meeting, because the third meeting changed my life. I had been reading a book at that point, and the name of the book was How to Find God. Right? I was raised Catholic. At one point, I even went to Catholic school, and I was even an altar boy, and you know, I had these ideas about God. And I definitely believed in God as a child. And then somewhere in adolescence, lost that. It was gone. And then I was crashing and burning, very early age. And I came across this book called How to Find God. And I said, it's worth a shot. You know, I'm like, I'm basically hoping for a miracle. You know, I'm hoping for something to do for me what I can't do for myself. So I start reading this book, How to Find God. And I don't know, something about it like really pulled me in, you know, like I was really enthralled in this book. And I started to pray, and I was asking for help. This is all going on at the same time that this meeting thing's happening. I'm praying for help, I'm asking for help, I'm asking for a sign, I'm asking for some kind of guidance. Now, third meeting. I show up to the meeting, it's the same group, right? As the first two times. Week three, I show up. And by the way, this group turned, it's just the weirdest thing. It could have been any group anywhere. It turned out that group was like one of the best groups I've ever been to. It became my home group. They were a huge, big book, 12-step, higher power group. I just was lucky enough that that's the group I found. So it's a Tuesday night, and I look at the clock, and I realize if I try to go home first before going to the meeting, I'm going to be super late. I might as well get to this stupid meeting early, right? And I have my How to Find God book with me, you know? So I go, all right, I'll go. I'll find a quiet spot in this stupid church, and I'll read my book, and I'll wait for this stupid meeting to start. And I pull up, and I notice, and by the way, I wasn't really that early, you know? It was like only like maybe 15 minutes or something like that, you know? But to me, I think like people, they show up on time and leave right after. I don't know about the meeting before the meeting or the meeting after. I don't know anything about that. And I see people, and I go, what are these losers doing here so early? Like, what the hell? Like, stupid, you know? I'm just angry. Grab my How to Find God book, and I'm angrily going to go into the church. Now, there's this thing that I also didn't know about at that time called a greeter, right? I didn't know anything about AA. I didn't know nothing about AA, right? And I go to walk in, and the greeter happens to be a very attractive young woman, right? Yeah. Oh, and she goes, "Welcome," and that kind of like blew me away. Like, welcome. Like, honestly, at that point, no one was welcoming me anywhere. You know what I mean? Like, I really was like a terror. You know, I burned a lot of bridges, and here's somebody, an attractive young woman, saying, "Welcome." You know, okay, that got my attention. Right? She asked me, she goes, "Are you new?" Now, I had been to 2 meetings already, so in my head, I'm not new. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what the hell. Like, I don't know anything. And I go, "Well, no, I've been to 2 meetings." And she goes, "Do you have a sponsor?" Now, I'd heard about this thing. I had heard about a sponsor. And there was no way I was going to get some dude to sit there and I was going to tell them about me. Like, that's not happening. I would, however, consider a female sponsor. And I'm thinking maybe she might want to be my sponsor. Maybe she might want to go get some coffee. Like, I'm very confused about what's happening at this moment with this attractive greeter, you know? And so I say no, and I'm about to go into my spiel about why I'm not getting a sponsor. She goes, "Do you have a sponsor?" I say no. And then over my shoulder, I hear a voice say, "Well, you got one now, kid." What? Like, it was like some kind of like bait and switch like situation. You know what I mean? Like, what the hell? So now this guy grabs me and he starts talking to me. Oh, by the way, that greeter, by the way, this is so amazing. All these years, and this is a long time ago, she is still sober after all these years. After all these years. And it's funny, you never know how you can affect somebody. And every once in a blue moon, because I don't live by where that meeting was anymore, right? So I don't get a chance to go to that circuit of meetings. But every once in a while, I will see her. And in my mind, that greeter is like the face of AA that welcomed me. Like, it's so weird. And she has no idea, probably. I mean, I might have told her once, like years later. But she has no idea, like, that's the person who basically welcomed me into AA. She had no idea that she was going to be doing that, right? It's like kind of cool. You never know how you can affect somebody. So this guy pulls me aside and he goes, "Do you have a big book?" And I say, or I ask him, I go, "Do you mean the Bible?" And he goes, "No, kid, that's the big, big book. Come on, let me give you a big book." And I go, "Oh my God, what the hell is going on?" So he brings me downstairs and he gives me my first big book. Now, here's the thing. He's giving me a gift, right? He's giving me something. I got welcomed by a complete stranger, attractive young woman. That was nice. And now this guy is giving me a gift, free of charge. Okay. Maybe AA is not so bad after all, you know? All right. So we're talking. And then he asks me, he goes, and somebody might have asked you this question too. It's right out of the big book. And he asked me, he goes, "Are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober?" That's what he asked me. At which point I told my first lie in AA. I said, yeah. I mean, I'm not willing to go to any lengths to do anything. Really, that's the truth. But I'm not going to tell him that, because I suspect that if I actually tell him that, then he might not tell me whatever secret he was about to tell me. You know what I mean? I'm pretty smart like that, you know? Like, I'm like a chameleon. I'll play the game. So I'm playing the game. Yeah, I'm willing to go to any lengths. I'm willing to do nothing. So then the last thing he says before the meeting starts, right? There are three major things, right? Gave you the two. The third thing that he says to me, these are the ones that stuck, was he says, listen, meeting's about to start, and you don't have to say anything. You don't have to do anything, but I'll make a suggestion. And I go, I'm in my head, I'm like, here we go. You know, here comes the nonsense. And he says, I'm going to suggest that you try and keep an open mind and listen to what these people have to say. And I thought to myself, well, that doesn't seem that hard. Okay, I could do that. Try and keep an open mind and listen to what these idiots have to say. Okay, all right, I'll do that. And I sit down, and the meeting begins. And this is the craziest thing. You can't tell somebody to have this. You can't say, have this experience. It happens. This is my first spiritual experience in AA. It's like a white light experience. It's crazy. Because I walked into AA and I hated AA. And when I left that meeting that night, I was in love with AA. It was the craziest thing. And I'm sitting there and I'm trying to keep an open mind and I'm listening. Same group, same people. But I'm hearing something different. And I'm hearing people say things like, I couldn't stop drinking, and I came here, and I got connected with the power greater than myself, and it changed my life, and my life is better. And variations on that, you know? And I'm listening to that, and I'm going, wait a second, higher power? And then some of them were saying, like, God of my understanding, stuff like that. I go, God of my understanding. And then I look up at the shades. It's the first time I'm actually reading the steps. I'd heard of 12 steps. I didn't know what they were. And now this is the first time I go, oh, 12 steps. And I'm start reading the steps. And I'm reading the steps and I see God. And I see God, God, God. And I go, wait a second, I didn't know AA was about God. I was reading a book called How to Find God, right? That's what I was reading. A book called How to Find God, and I was like really interested in this book. Like I really wanted some kind of spiritual connection. That's what I wanted. And I'm in this place, and these people are talking about how they got connected to God, you know, their understanding. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, wait a second, this is weird. I've been praying for, I don't know, maybe it was like 3 weeks, maybe it was a month, who knows? I mean, I was, you know, going through it, so it's hard to tell you how much time was passing. But I was praying for help. And it seemed like my life wasn't getting better, it was getting worse. And that was weird. It was like, I'm asking for help and it's not getting better. You know, what the hell? And now I'm sitting in this meeting and all of a sudden I'm remembering, my brain is Swiss cheese, you know, because I'm... like, I drink a lot. And I do a lot of other drugs, too. You know what I mean? I'm not all there. And all of a sudden, I start making this connection. I go, oh, wait a second. I've been praying for help, for a sign, for something. And it was weird, too, because in this moment, I realized the truth of what I was asking for. See, I wasn't really asking for, like, God. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted God. Like, I wanted, like, woo-woo God. I wanted magic God. But what I was asking for specifically, like, in my head, like, what I was hoping for was, like, a new girlfriend or a windfall of money. You know what I mean? Like, something like that, you know? Because in my mind, the things that are going to fix me are always some external, outside, shiny thing that's going to make me feel good. That's what I'm looking for. That's what I want. So that's kind of what when I'm praying, help, 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 that's kind of what I have in mind. And what's crazy as I'm sitting there is I realize, wait a second, that's what I had in mind. But I think this is the... I realized in that moment, like whatever it was that I was praying to, like I wasn't convinced that there was a God. I was hoping there was, but I wasn't convinced. And in that moment, I realized, oh my God, whatever it was I was praying to, it's real. and it heard my prayers. And wouldn't you know it, AA is the answer to my prayers? That's crazy. Like, I knew in that moment, in that spot, I knew that if I keep coming here, I'm going to be okay. How did I know that? Like, this is my third AA meeting. I hate you guys. I don't want anything to do with AA. And I'm in this meeting, and I'm realizing that stuff. That's weird. you know? Now, here's the other thing that's happening. As that's happening, like, as I'm coming to those realizations, it's like the room is getting brighter. Weird. I'm getting, like goosebumps as I'm sitting there, and the room is getting brighter. Now, the last thing that fleshes out this whole experience is there's a song by Bob Marley called Three Little Birds, and the chorus says, "Don't worry about a thing because every little thing is going to be all right." That part of the song was like blasting in my head. Like, I could hear, "Don't worry about a thing because every little thing is going to be all right." You know, it took me a long time to realize the other connection with that song was, you know, it's called Three Little Birds, and that was my third AA meeting, you know? And I knew I didn't have to worry about anything. If I kept coming to AA, I was going to be okay. It's crazy. Come into that meeting, I hate AA. I leave that meeting, I'm in love with AA. And that was the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous for me. I got a sponsor. We began to go through this book and go through the steps. He wasn't very nice, my sponsor. He was not a nice person. Most of my early sponsors were not nice people. You know, they were very sarcastic. They were very abrupt. They weren't handholders. You know, they were the kind of people that would say things like, "You need AA. AA don't need you." You know, great. Yeah, great. Thanks. You know, that's exactly what I need to hear. But you know what's weird is, like, that's exactly, I don't think that that's the approach that everybody needs, for sure, but it is the approach that I needed. I needed some tough guys to really kind of kick me in the ass and get me to stop being so narcissistic. And so we start going through this thing, and I was on what people would call back then, and I guess they still use this term, I was on a pink cloud, you know, because I had that experience. I was all for this. I'll do whatever I have to do. I'll do it. And I was willing to do it. And I was the guy who, if it said, "This is what you got to do," I did, whether I liked it or not, I did it. No matter how hard it was, I did it. I didn't want to make my amends. For sure. I didn't want... These are the two things. At the end of that meeting, that guy who was my who spoke to me, we were talking afterwards, and I said, "Listen, I was reading the steps, and I can get with most of them, but there's two steps I'm never going to be able to do. I'm never doing them." And you could guess, right? Steps 5 and 9. I'm not going to sit and talk to somebody, some dude, and tell him about my whole life. I'm not doing that. And I'm not going to people and saying I'm sorry or paying them money. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to go and admit. Like, if you don't know what I did to you, we're keeping it that way. You know what I mean? I'm not doing that. Right? I wouldn't imagine anyone in here would identify with those statements at all. Right, but that's where I was at. I'm not doing that. And that guy that first night, he said to me, "Well, you know, you don't have to worry about that right now because you're 5 and 9 steps away from both of those. You're not there yet, so you don't have to worry about it." I go, "You could do that?" And he goes, "Yeah." I go, "Okay." Right? So I put it out of my head. I'm like, "I'm not going to worry about that." And by the time I got to those steps, I came to the realization that if I wanted to continue on this process, I'd have to do it. And I did it. Changed my life. Now, all right, so that's the beginning, that's the introduction to this book for me, is that whole experience. And I want to tell you that, I wish I could say to you that from that spiritual experience I described to you to this very day, I stayed clean and sober that whole time. And that's just not my story. I did, however, stay sober for about 7 years. And doing this whole thing. And you go, well, how does somebody relapse after 7 years? Right? And this is what I came to find out. Through my own experience. I want to talk to you about this book from the point of view of... I personalized this book for me. Like, the experiences that they describe in this book, I know what they mean through the prism of my perspective, right? And every one of the things that it talks, the concepts that it talks about in here, I can talk to you about it, but the best way for me to talk to a person about it is, like, through my experience, like, what happened for me, right? So, like, they have, they're in this book, there's a description, I believe it's in More About Alcoholism, where they give us these parables of a couple different case studies, right? And one of the case studies is the man of 30. Man of 30, and they say he realized that if he kept on drinking, he wouldn't become successful in business. So, exceptional man. He remained bone dry for 25 years. He must have been a real pleasure to be around for those 25 years, right? You can imagine. When I first came here, I didn't identify with that guy because I never had an experience like that. But the experience that I can tell you is I identify with that now, because what happened for me is that they describe alcoholism as cunning, baffling, and powerful, right? Without help, it's too much for us, right? So here's the thing that happens with alcoholism is that, from my experience... is that I have an illness, it affects me when I'm drinking, but it also affects me when I'm not drinking. And when we talk about it as cunning, baffling, and powerful, the way that it presents itself or the way it manifests in my life when I'm not actively drinking, it manifests itself through my thinking and my emotions. It manifests itself in, I start to get these crazy ideas about the way the world is and the way you all are and what I'm going to have to do in order to teach you that I'm not the one and blah, you know, all this nonsense, right? And that stuff starts to seem rational and logical. What I found is, like, when I go through, when I actually practice the 12 steps as the spiritual exercises that they are, as a way of life, right? When I practice that, I actually do pretty well in my life. Like, I'm able to go through very difficult circumstances like I described at the beginning, right? I'm able to have what they call it, like, an attitude of gratitude, right? Gratitude shows up in, like, the things that you do, right? It's not just an emotion, but it's also, you know, in your behavior. All of those things are true when I'm working a program. But if I stop working a program and, you know, The main basics that they talk about in this book, they talk about, and it's only a few things. There's prayer and meditation. There is inventory. There is making of amends. There's humility. There's service, right? Like giving back, giving to other people. It's like very basic stuff in a specific order. And when I stop practicing that stuff in my life, I stop helping people. That's usually the first one. That's usually the first one to go. I'm not helping anybody anymore. You know what I mean? Like, screw you. You know, like really, like, dude, I have important things going on in my life, man. Like, leave me alone. Stop calling me. You know what I mean? Like, God, you know, you want me to listen to your fifth step? Well, there goes another 7 hours of a Saturday wasted. You know what I mean? Like, that's what happens in the head, right? Where you say, I'm not doing that. An outgoing? That's going to be on a Sunday? No, I'm not doing that. I got to go to Westfield? Where is Westfield? I don't know. I mean, it's a nice town, guys. I'm not putting Westfield down. But, I mean, it's like an hour away from me. I'm not going. You know what I mean? Like, it starts there. And then it's like, and this is how it works for me. It might work a little bit differently for you, but for me, it happens like this. So it starts with that stuff. Then it's like meditation. very busy. Prayer, all right, help, please. Like, can you make this happen? Right? Like, help me. But, and then that kind of goes. Inventory, I am taking inventory. I'm taking your inventory. You know, you're an idiot. You know, I'm getting resentful. I have fears, and they're like eating my lunch. You know what I mean? Like, oh my God, how am I going to make my nut this month? Oh my God, what am I going to? Where is she? What is she doing? Does she know what I did? Like, you know, all this stuff is like, it's going on inside my head, right? That's without a drink, without another substance, but I'm not working a program. That's the stuff that starts to happen. And all of that thinking and all of those emotions are getting louder and louder and louder, right? And I didn't realize how loud my head was. I'm one of those guys that's like, put the TV on, put the radio on, watching TikTok. I mean, it's like, you know, doing all these 10 different things just to distract myself from how loud my head is, you know? So what happened for me? This is basically the events that transpired. I'm doing very well in AA, okay? And I have a daughter, right? I have a daughter. That's a life changer. And when I have the daughter, I realize I need to kind of step it up. Remember I told you I didn't think I was going to see 30, so I didn't really try. Well, now I should probably start trying. So I decide I'm going to go back to school. That's a good thing. So I go back to school, and I'm kind of put myself through college. And then I make a decision, I'm going to move. And it's a good decision. It's not a bad decision. It's a good decision. Because I'm going to be closer to my daughter, and I'm going to be closer to my school, and it makes a lot of sense. Moving. I'm still in New York, just in a different part. And I make that move. And the one thing that, you might have had this experience, the one thing about the move that was kind of disheartening was I was going to have to find a new home group, right? Now, my home group, the one that I was at, that first group that I told you about, that was my home group, that was the greatest home group in AA, in all of AA. That was the greatest home group. You couldn't convince me there was a better home. That was the best. Some of you might feel like that about this group, and that's great. That's how I felt about my group, the best. And the problem when you have the best home group in AA is if you move, now what do? You go to other groups, they all stink, you know, they're no good. You go and you tell them, well, you know, you could do this and make it better, and people don't like to hear that. You know what I mean? Like, when you go to other groups and you start telling them how they should do things, they're like, you're not doing that. Get out of here. They kind of scowl at you. You know, so I'm home group shopping, but I'm having a hard time finding a group that could measure up to that first group. It's impossible. So I finally settle on a group. Nothing wrong with that group. They're a good group. They're just not the first group. And that's kind of... So I'm going to school. I'm doing my thing. Right, I don't think I need a sponsor as much anymore. You know what I mean? Because after all, when I made that move, I was about 5 years sober. You know, 5 years. I mean, you know, hot shit. You know what I mean? Like, I know. See this? You see this book right here? At 5 years, I knew that book, this book, backwards and forwards. I could tell you anything you need to know about this book. I could tell you. So I thought. I could tell you about the traditions because I had been in service. I was a GSR and then I became a DCM. I mean, hot stuff. You know what I mean? I'm an AA legend. I even know something, right? I know about the steps. I know about the traditions. And I even know something about the concepts. Whoa. Yeah. Yeah, now you're impressed. See, you thought you knew. Well, I know, right? Right? And that's with 5 years, you know? So I go, I don't need my sponsor as much. That's how it's like, it starts with stuff like this. I know it sounds stupid, but it starts with little things like that. I make the move, I'm not that crazy about the group I have. They're okay, though. They're a fun group. They have a lot of fellowship. They're fun. And I'm going to have some fun. And then I start making little concessions. Right? Like, I can cut corners a little bit. Because I got 6 years. I can cut corners. I started doing things that I could never get away with in my first home group. The old-timers at my first home group would bludgeon me. They were like I said, they were mean, mean people. But they kept me in line. See, that was why it was so good. They kept me in line. Now I had no one to keep me in line, right? So I'm acting out. I'm misbehaving. I had a good name in AA, and now my name in AA is plummeting. You know what I mean? And now, right, based on my actions, I show up to a meeting and I don't feel like I'm at home anymore, you know? I just don't feel like I'm at home. And I feel like you guys have been talking about me. You know? I know you've been talking about me. And you know what? I think you're no good too. How about that? You think I'm bad? Well, screw you. Because you want to judge me for what I'm doing? What about what you do? How about that? Because every meeting you're always complaining, and every meeting you don't do nothing, and every meeting you leave, this is where my head's gone. Right? This is like untreated alcoholism. It manifests in the thinking and the emotions. And what happens, and the way they describe it in this book, is if that condition persists for long enough, eventually the insane idea comes back. And the insane idea for me manifested like this. I said, now I have like 7 years, and I'm pretty sure now AA is a sham. Pretty sure. I don't really need it. I can go a couple weeks without going to a meeting, and I feel perfectly fine. And I'm pretty sure you guys are trash. You know, you're no good. And the idea comes to me. It's a brilliant idea. And it goes, you know, but I talk to myself, right? It's like I'll hear my own voice talking to me very nicely. And it's like, well, you know, look at how good you're doing. You know, I graduated from school. I had a career. I had a corner office in the city. I mean, I'm doing pretty good. You know, I can take care of myself. I can pay my bills. I show up to work every day on time. Like, that's important. I could never do that stuff. I grocery shop. I'm responsible. And the voice said, you know, you can do all this stuff like a normal person. Maybe you could drink like a normal person. You know? I mean, think about it like this. When you got sober, I mean, you were like 19. Maybe you were just like a normal 19-year-old who just drank too much. Maybe that's what it was. I mean, listen, just because you drink irresponsibly doesn't make you an alcoholic. You can go to any college campus and see people drinking irresponsibly, and that does not make them alcoholics. And maybe you're not an alcoholic. Maybe you bought into the lie. Huh? How about that? And I'm sitting there all by myself, just me with me, talking to me. And I go, yeah, maybe I'm not an alcoholic. I mean, maybe I could drink and I could have fun and it would be cool. And I could, like, you know, have some fun. Right? Now, think about what I told you about what led up to all this. Me and my sponsor were estranged. I mean, he's my sponsor in name only. I mean, I haven't called the guy in who knows how long. My friends in AA, I don't even want to talk to them anymore because I feel like they're against me, you know? I feel like they're against me because I've been doing things and I know people have been talking. I know it. And, you know, I'm not so happy about that. And I think that maybe I'd like to just kind of... See, it's like alcoholism has this way of like isolating us from the herd, you know? Like, we need each other. Community is so important. Never put down the fellowship, because the fellowship is super important. We need a community of people. We need people that could look us in the eye and go, you okay? We need somebody, when we start like talking out the side of our mouth, they go, I don't know, that doesn't sound great. I mean, When's the last time you talked to? When's the last time you did inventory?
Wow.
When's the last time you helped somebody?
What?
What? You know, like, we need people to say things like that to us. Like, it slaps us in the face. Alcoholism will isolate us. So I'm isolated from the things, the people that I need. I don't pray anymore. I don't have a spiritual life. I'm not helping anybody. I'm not doing inventory. I mean, what am I doing? I have no humility. I have no gratitude. And the insane idea comes back. And what do you think I did? Right? You know, you've seen that movie already. You know how this one ends. I pick up the drink. And you know what happened to me? Right? What happened to me is what always happens to me when I pick up a drink. Right? I pick up a drink. It's like that one where they go, the man picks up the drink, the drink picks up the drink, the man takes the drink, the drink takes the drink, the drink takes the man. Right? And I pick up a drink, and all of those thoughts about maybe I'm not an alcoholic, night one, I knew was total nonsense. Once I start, I can't stop. Once I open up the genie bottle, that's it. Man, that demon comes out and it takes over my life, and that's what happened. And so that experience, while it was a hard experience to have, it was a valuable experience for me because it showed me. See, it's like these experiences that we have, it's like the important part is you have to survive them. And we don't always survive them. That's the deal. This is dangerous stuff. But you survive the experience and it's a valuable one because I realized the reality of the situation is this, and then I'll end with this. the thing is, I am very aware of the fact that I could stay sober till I'm 95 years old. And at 95 years old, if I pick up a drink, I know what's going to happen. I mean, I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I know what's going to happen to me as far as the drink goes. I have this condition. It's a real thing. Once I start, I can't stop. I just have that. And it takes over my life, and I do all kinds of things that are tragic and horrible, and they don't make me better, and they don't make me happier, and they just make everything worse. And so every one of us has to get to that place where we finally concede to our innermost selves that that's the reality of the situation for us, that I'm one of those people. That I drink and it takes over my life. And once we get there, then we can then go on with the rest of the steps. And so the next two, I'm going to be here for 3 weeks, so the next two talks are going to be, you know, really about cleaning house and helping others. And what those steps have been like, those 11 steps have been like in my life. So anyway, thanks for letting me go on, and I'd love to hear from you. Thank you.